You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. You're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And this is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and mother, Caroline Kilborn. We're back live in the studio on this beautiful October day in Iowa. I've been out of town for a while, and it's great to be back.
Yes, you've been out for a while.
Hi, Mom. And we've got a little bit of technical difficulty here, so we're trying to conference someone in, and I couldn't get the conference switched over onto the studio line. So we have one of the two people, and then I'm going to work on getting the other person on. So, Mom, why don't you take over here for a little while I go work on that?
Okay, I'll do that. The excuse me, I've got frog in my throat, unfortunately. The book today is Two Paths, One Understanding, and it's co-authored by brother and sister, Jim Counter and Anna Counter. One of them writes their experiences first, and then Jim writes his first in the book, and then his sister writes hers. And they are both interesting. They're both very articulate, and it's easy to read, and it's very, like I said, very interesting. A little bit about them. Have you, in the back of the book, it says, have you ever said, is this all there is to life? Or why do bad things happen to me and not to others? If you have, this book was written for you. It takes you on a sacred journey of two siblings with very different life experiences. One learns life's truths through hard work and good fortune. The other, on the brink of suicide, realizes a bond with an entity that takes her to a new level of spiritual understanding that ultimately can change the way mankind views the world. This book is guaranteed to set you on your own journey of discovery and truth. And this is very true. It's, well, what do I say? Okay. What else did they have here?
Well, why don't you go ahead and introduce Jim?
Okay, Jim, since you were the first one to write here, could you tell us what decided you to write this book?
Well, you know, Jan and I were born of the same parents and actually lived together for the first 9 or 10 years of my life, but we were separated at that point. Mm-hmm. She had gotten married at a very young age and moved to southern Iowa, while I still lived in northern Minnesota. We didn't have very much contact for many years, but about 20 years ago, we kind of reestablished our contact and found out that we had similar beliefs in our life, even though our life experiences were almost 180 degrees opposite of each other. Our beliefs turned out to be the same.
That's interesting. Of course, you had that brother-sister bond that is very strong.
Yes, indeed. And my sister Anna had, and I'll let her tell that part of the story, but she had begun channeling an entity called Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
And Romulus told her that she would be, she and I would be writing a book together, and it took several years for us to get convinced that that was fact. Particularly due to the fact that she was pretty good with vocabulary and was an already an author, a published author, and I had not done anything of that sort. So I was probably the doubter in this whole thing. We tried to write to figure out how to write a book together, and that just didn't work. Our writing styles were so much different.
Right.
So we ended up each writing a portion of the book in our own style, and that's how it turned out.
Well, I would say it turned out very well when you did that because you do have two different approaches. That's the way it needed to be done, was separately.
Yes.
So, Jim, how long did you work on writing this book?
Probably a couple of years. I first started determining how, you know, I couldn't picture myself writing a book. So I started writing stories, and kind of some stories of my own life experiences. And it turned out, as I put a bunch of those down, that it turned out that they could actually become, with a little modification, become chapters of a book. So I kind of got into it gradually that way, figuring out that I couldn't write a book, but I could write stories.
Were these stories things that you had told your family, told your kids before, or were you revisiting something that you had put aside for a long time?
Well, both. The stories were probably of my life experience, of the, you know, the things that I had lived with throughout my life. But my kids had encouraged me to put some of this down. I have six children, and they have encouraged me to write some of these stories down so that they would be able to refer back to them.
Well, yes, because I'm sure they wanted to get them accurate. And but you had an interesting life as a child and a teenager. I want to tell about that a little bit. Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to tell about your early life as a child and a teenager a little bit?
Well, my mother and father were divorced when I was 5 years old. My sister was 9 at the time, and as is typical of divorces back in those years, our custody was awarded to our mother.
Uh huh.
She moved us up to a very small town in northern Minnesota where she had been raised, my father ended up moving out of the country. He had a job with a construction company building the big international airport at Reykjavik, Iceland.
Oh my goodness!
So my mother kind of raised us from the very beginning, we had no money. We were extremely poor, to a point where we were living off of handoffs of different people, even to the point of getting some of our food. My mother met a man that had 4 children already, and it turned out that we moved in. First of all, she was going to be a housekeeper for this family in exchange for our being able to live there. As it turned out, the mother of the 4 children left at a very young age. When the youngest baby was only weeks old.
Oh my goodness!
Baby, and she never came back. So it turns out my mother and this man, he became my stepfather.
Uh-huh. Jim, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment to try and get Anna on. Just a moment. Okay, do I have both Anna and Jim now?
Well, you have me.
You have me too.
All right. Okay, all right, Monica.
Success.
Good for you.
All right. Well, Anna has...
Everybody's happy.
Anna, Jim has been telling us a little bit of the background of your family and, you know, how he came to... What, you know, his hesitation about writing this book. What inspired you to want to write this with Jim?
Well, as you would find out from the book, I have channeled an entity since 1983 named Romulus, and Romulus kept saying that Jim and I had to write a book, that we were going to write a book. He told me that for years until finally Jim and I decided, probably in order just to shut him up, we're going to go ahead and write the book, and that is mainly how it came to be.
Okay.
So, Jim, do you want to pick up where you were talking about your, you know, the origins, the family origins, and, you know, how you ended up with in this very remote area with six kids? And
well, even when we moved in with we moved in with this other family, and they became our stepbrothers and sisters, stepfather, we were still quite poor. We did have a little dairy farm. Had milked about 8 or 9 cows, and kind of tried to live off of the cream checks, but really didn't have a whole lot of money for anything. But, you know, we didn't realize that we were poor, because a lot of the people around us were in the same kinds of conditions. So I don't think we ever, I never at least, looked at ourselves as being poor or not having anything. We usually had enough food to eat. And even though a lot of it was a lot of times wild game, where, you know, my stepfather was a pretty good hunter, and he would hunt deer and fish and different kinds of animals that we would be able to eat, along with raising a large garden. My mother canned 700 or 800 quarts of food every year.
Oh, my gosh.
To hold us through the winter. So we didn't really ever have a feeling that, you know, we were without, or that we were different from anybody else. My mother, there was a very spiritual relationship with my mom, and she taught us a lot about love. About she'd take me into the woods, and she'd show us the what plants could be eaten and what plants couldn't be. And she taught us a respect for life, for all kinds of life, without regard to the type of life. It might be a plant life, it might be an animal life, it might be a human life, but she taught us to respect life. And Jan and I, I'm sure, I'm sorry, Anna and I, I'm sure, have different memories on some of these things.
Yeah, Anna, do you want to give kind of your perspective? You were the eldest, correct?
That is true. Well, Dennis told you just about everything up until we come to my mother. And when we come to my mother, Jim and I each had a different relationship with our mother. She treated us differently, and we reacted differently. Not that I didn't love my mother, but it was different than the bond that Jim and my mother had. And so when, in order to get away from home, I married at 16 and moved down to Iowa. And then kind of just had a... Jim had a good life all the way through, or mainly a good life, which he made for himself. And me, I had a little worse life, and I have to admit, I made that for myself also. So we had diametrically different lives, more or less. But toward the end, when we've come together, we find ourselves with the same spiritual values, the same ideas, the same tenets, the same theories about reality, the same interest in quantum. It's amazing that our minds could be exactly alike with the different lives that we have led.
And that's why the title of the book is Two Paths, One Understanding.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Now, it seemed like... you were always, that you stayed in touch, even though your lives took very different directions. Is that true?
Well, very infrequently for a long time. Years went by sometimes that we were not even in touch. And then if we did get in touch, it was usually briefly. Until toward the end of our lives, we came back together again, more or less.
Hold on, let's not be talking about the end of our lives, girl.
So, in the middle, you came back together again.
Well, Anna, you did arrange with your father, with your birth father, that your brother should go and live with him, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It seemed like you always were sort of watching out for him, even though, you know, some in the family dynamic that you describe, you might expect the sibling who's kind of on the outs with the mother to resent the ones that get her attention, but that didn't seem to be the case.
Oh, never, never. When he was born, I was nearly five, and from that time on, I just loved him. That's all. He was my little brother, and it never changed all through the years. I never felt resentment about anything.
It took her many years to start resenting me.
Oh, you lie. Oh.
So as you, when, Anna, when you started channeling Romulus, was that something that you shared with Jim at that time?
Not at that time, no. It came about that my life was in shambles, and or so I believed. And I was, you'll read this in the book, I was going to commit suicide. I was not just contemplating it, I was going to do it. And I sat at the typewriter one day, and I was going to type out a suicide note, and then I was going to get in my car and run it into a tree. This was my plan at the time. And my fingers were poised over the keys, and all of a sudden they began moving by themselves. I was not doing it. And you talk about the hair standing up on the back of your neck. That happened. Anyway, at first it was very, very slow. And the most that came out that time was that I am Romulus. That was very clear. And then it said that if I would come back to the typewriter every day, that our contact would get stronger. And that was the end of it for the first one. But I decided at that time that, well, my goodness, you know, I could put off committing suicide. Let's see what this is all about.
Right.
So that's how it came about that I got my contact with the other side.
Now, did you wonder if you might be crazy?
Yeah. I wondered if I was crazy. I wondered if I had really gone round the bend. I wondered if this was the devil, and I was communicating with him, and would I go to hell for that? That was my religious upbringing. And all those things went through my mind time and time again.
And how did you convince yourself that you weren't crazy?
I think it was mainly that the second day I got on the typewriter with Romulus, I felt a little better about it, a little safer. And from then on, there was a kind of a feeling built up, a feeling of trust. And I just felt this trust in the communication. And from then on, I don't know if you talk about a contact on the other side as being a buddy, but that's more or less what it was. And he was my teacher. He guided me through all the things that I had to work out, the bad, negative things in my life that had turned me into what I was. He guided me back through those things, and then we decided on this experiment that we're in right now, many years later. And so that's more or less how it was.
Now, Anna, with this book, Two Paths, One Understanding, this isn't your first book that you've written, is it?
No, it is not my first book. My first book was a very dark book, and it was a book about 4 years in my childhood, and that was one of the things that I was being helped to get through and understand, come to an understanding about it. And that is exactly what Romulus did for me, what he helped me to do, was understand about all these things that had driven me to negative ends a lot of my life.
And what was the title of that book?
I'm Jesse.
And did you write it after you started communicating with Romulus?
Yes.
So
that was
writing
a catharsis.
That book, yeah, I was going to ask, was writing that book part of your kind of healing process, part of your working through these things?
Yes.
And how, what kind of reaction did you get with that? Like from readers, what kind of reaction?
There were different reactions. As I said, it's a dark book, and it's not one that a lot of people would want to read. Even some people didn't even finish reading it, I was told. Others told me it was a good book, a tell-all book, and they could see where it would be a catharsis for me. But that's about it. It's the dark book, that's all.
And so this one, Two Paths, One Understanding, is not so dark.
No. This one is a light, bright, hope for the future, believe that we have a different reality type book.
Well, that certainly is the way that Jim approaches his part of the book. And I jotted down a lot of different things in it that he said. And I really, there's a lot of wisdom there. And of course, he was a businessman. Well, he worked from the time he was, the time he could stand up practically, milking cows and taking care of things, and then went into business and so forth. And always with, I gathered, always with a positive attitude. Is that right, Jim?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And part of that came from my mother. Anna and I had totally different experiences with my mother, and she always, my mother always told me that I could be anything I wanted to be, that I could do anything I wanted to do, and she gave me this self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Very beginning that kind of stuck with me throughout my life.
That makes a big difference, doesn't it? When somebody says you can do this, you will be able to do these things, whatever you want to do, instead of, oh, you're not going to do anything, you're not going to amount to anything. And unfortunately, a lot of young people get that, and then they don't want to try.
You're right on that.
Well, Jim, I'm curious, when you got in touch with your sister again at some point and she told you about this being that she was channeling, what was your reaction to that?
Well, initially when we got together, she didn't tell me about that. I think she hid that for a while because, you know, like she says, she was afraid that the people with the white cloaks were going to come and get her. But once she confided in me about this, my first reaction was kind of, oh boy, she kind of went off the deep end now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As we communicated on this, and as I started reading some of the conversations, she'd had these conversations all over the typewriter, so she had physical evidence that of the conversations with Romulus. And I could tell by reading these that there were two entities that were putting this together. It wasn't her. At first I thought she had a wonderful imagination, and how could she do that, you know? But I eventually became to believe this really was true, and she was channeling somebody. So it took me a while to really believe in what she was doing, but once I did, I accepted it, and really it fascinated me, and I just wanted to learn more about it.
So, Anna, you would type your side of the conversation, too?
Initially, yes. But later on, I would just, gradually, I would start just thinking the things in my mind, and then Romulus would type them, type his answers. I asked him how he came through to me one time, and he said that the way that he could move my fingers was that he communicated through my subconscious mind, and it was through my subconscious mind that my fingers were moving. Now, this was his explanation for it. But I could think things in my mind. I could think the questions and so on, but always he would type them, his answers out.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guests today are Jim Counter and Anna Counter, the author of Two Paths, One Understanding, A True Story That Changes the Way Mankind Views the World. And Jim and Anna will be in Fairfield, Iowa, next Friday, October 14th at Revelations at 7:30, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, 7:30 to 9.
And they'll be doing a reading and signing books and answering questions. Have you been to Fairfield before, either of you?
Yes, I have. I was at Fairfield to set up this book signing with Freddie.
And where do you live now?
A Muscatine.
Okay. And Jim, have you been to Fairfield?
I have not, no.
And where are you living now?
A little town called Comstock, Wisconsin. It's up in northwestern Wisconsin.
Okay, so you're going to have a bit of a drive next week.
Yes, I am.
You'll be driving through the beautiful fall colors, hopefully.
Yes, they're starting to change.
Well, why don't we have each of you read a little bit from your section of the book so that the readers can get listeners can get an idea of the story that you're telling here.
I wonder if Jim.
Well, Jim, why don't you begin? Do you have a book with you?
Okay, there was there are a lot of important things in your part, Jim, but the one about setting goals, starting on page 75, was very important because this is what people, they want to do things, they really do want to achieve things, but they're not quite sure how to go about it. So these ideas were really good. Could you read that part?
The part that starts on page 75?
Yeah, about setting goals. Do I have the page right? I took a lot of notes, but
okay.
Let's see.
This will be Jim Counter reading from Two Paths, One Understanding.
Maybe that isn't the right one.
while Caroline tries to find the part she wants him to read.
Well, I'll just let you read what you want to because
I'm starting on page 75. I started my career as a life insurance agent, making my living by cold calling people from lists of new births, new homeowners, new marriages, and all the things that we use to qualify prospects with. I quickly learned that getting referrals from my customers was an easier way to prospect. When people agreed to set up an appointment, I almost always saw them in their home. I learned early on that I could tell in advance, even before getting into the house, if I was going to make a sale or not. If I could visualize myself writing the application as I was walking up to the door, I almost always succeeded. I don't know if this is a form of telepathy, but I do know that it worked. And my closing ratio in the office was the highest, in the office. I've learned over the years that if I wanted something, I could get it. I applied myself appropriately. Now, what does that mean? When you have a goal, first it has to be a reasonable goal for you. Don't try to start with the near impossible and then say, I failed. Set short, intermediate, and long-term goals. Next step is important. Write them down. By doing this, you don't have the problem of trying to remember or conveniently forgetting what the goals were. Then you must communicate the goals. Let others witness what you say you will do. Now you are less likely to back down than when the going gets tough. Next, prepare yourself to achieve the goal. Go to school, study, or practice. Now the hard part begins. Believe in your heart that you have attained these goals. Foster that belief and reinforce it until it's an integral part of your thinking. Belief combined with of education and experience can bring you all the desired goals that you ever set for yourself. Of all these requisites, most important is belief.
Would you like
me to continue a little farther?
Yeah, go a little further. We have time.
I have witnessed throughout the years the attainment of my most important goals, though they may not have happened just the way I planned. As I look back on my career, these accomplishments are not just there. I brought them about with a belief and will. I was also able to obtain the number one position in sales of securities in a large national company. I was also able to build a number one agency in the United States for the same company with more than 100 registered representatives. It helps to set short-term goals as steps to accomplish your long-term goals. Set goals on a weekly or even a daily basis if you must. Know that the short-term failure will not deter you from reaching your long-term goals. Some people find that if they put their written goals away in a drawer and look at them later, they will achieve these goals. Others find that they must have their goals in front of them every day to review and confirm. Whichever way you choose to do it, remember, your mind is all-powerful. It causes you to accomplish what you believe.
Jim, is this the sort of overarching message of your part of the book about how to create your own life?
Well, it is a great deal. I love the book called The Secret. And the fact that, the secret reinforces the fact that what you can have whatever you want in life. If you truly believe within your own self that you can have it and you want it. But there's a huge difference between the want and the belief.
Mm-hmm.
He wants everything, and many things. But you believe that you must believe that you already have this if you're going to accomplish what you desire.
Jim, you said when you first started selling insurance that you could tell, if you could visualize yourself signing the contract, you almost always succeeded. Could you, make yourself visualize it? Or, did you have a technique for doing that? Or was it just that sometimes you did and sometimes you didn't?
Well, I didn't really have a technique, no. It's just that I learned that if I concentrated just before my physical contact with my prospect, if I could get this a visualization in my mind that they're going through the application and signing the application, that I had my closing ratio at that point was probably 95%. But if I couldn't visualize this as I was, walking up to the door, I almost never wrote an application. I'm going to plan on visualizing this as I walk up to the door. It was something that just kind of happened.
So when you formed your own company then, and you had people working under you, did you explain to them how this works? That they might try it?
Well, I always tried. I found that in trying to influence other people in how to believe, that was the most difficult part of it.
Okay.
Never understand. It seemed like when I hired agents, for example, it seemed like I wanted their success more than they wanted their success.
It always frustrated
me that they didn't have the same desire to succeed as apparently I did.
So desire to succeed, and not just desire, but like you said, it's desire is one thing, but belief is another thing altogether.
So I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, so it's really not just the desire to succeed, but the belief that you will. Not even the belief that you can, but the belief that you will.
Right, there's a difference there, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the belief that in order to have it happen, you have to have this belief that it already has happened.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, a lot of theories about time and whether time actually exists or all things truly happen simultaneously, and time is just our way of making sense of it.
Yeah.
Anna?
Yes.
Let's have you read from your part of the book, too.
Okay. I have decided on reading from Creating Your Own Reality. Most of us have heard or read that it's possible to create your own reality, but just how do we do that? Well, some people have the idea that others can do it for them. Some look for help and incentive from the other side, and so their whole life is spent waiting for a miracle. They never realize it's up to them to act, and the tools that will make their life better are already inside them, waiting to be used. Many people expect the living to create the reality they want, perhaps a spouse or parents or children. The only time that this seems true is in the first new flush of love, whether it's from a lover or at the birth of a baby. Some expect that their work, their career, a beautiful home, and a fat bank account will provide the reality they crave. These things merely create your surroundings, your place in society, and you accept the half-full glass, always sensing that there is more, but not understanding how to finish filling the glass to the top. Once you have achieved these things, they soon lose their luster and leave you thinking, I have all that I dreamed of, and it's not enough. So you look around and begin creating more of the same, thinking that this will bring the peace and fulfillment for which you have been searching, only to find that these new things are merely more band-aids that hide the truth. And after a while, you realize that the longing for something more is still there, as strong and demanding as ever. So then, what is this satisfaction we crave, and how do we create it? Somewhere deep inside your mind, the answer is clear and waiting. Everything we do, think, feel, or react to is always recorded in a giant mass computer called the collective unconscious. This means that any experience of which we are a part not only records our handling of the situation, but that of everyone else who is involved. We create who we are by the power we have to program our minds. If we allow our minds to dwell on such states as fear, hopelessness, anger, or any negative emotion, then that is what we become in life. We create our reality by the thoughts we believe about ourselves. The thoughts that we allow to grow create a cage that makes up our whole world. However, we possess the power to change these thoughts into their direct opposites, hope, love, trust, and faith. This power creates the day-to-day lives we live, and so thoughts wind up as our reality. Keep in mind that we draw to ourselves from this collective unconscious these same thoughts that are forming our reality. The more of one emotion we put in, the stronger it reflects that emotion back to us, and that forms our reactions to life. This immense storage area holds the sum of all the knowledge and experience indelibly imprinted there from the self-imposed situations we create and react to. If you are living your life tied to the wheel of negativity, fear, anger, and hatred, then you are playing the victim, then this is what will be reflected back to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know people like that. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. However, you react with thoughts and feelings of love, satisfaction, courage, and altruism, and these are what you will draw to yourself. Mm-hmm. The computer will always reinforce your life, not necessarily with what you need, but with what you request. Remember, though, this will lead to a limited experience of who you could be. We always have the choice of how we will react to things that happen to us. Negative and positive experiences are opposites. They're both made up of nothing more than basic energy. Also, to identify completely with either one produces limits that you will need to get rid of. By this, I mean that you can change your perceptions and map out an entirely different world for yourself by changing your day-to-day thinking. Remember, you are the boss, and you can change your reality at any time. One of the major changes that humanity is bringing about is the ability to consciously create rather than unconsciously creating. Learning to do this will also eventually result in your changing the physical world and even recreating your body, meaning that you will have conscious control over your health, your aging, and your needs. I don't know, you want me to go any further?
Sure.
Okay. To find gratification, you must search inward, where your reality begins, where all the positive words apply. If you feel at ease with meditation, set aside a time each day to explore that part of yourself that is hidden. Let your thoughts flow gently in and out again. Don't make judgments and do not identify with any one thought. To do so gives the emotion of that thought power over your mind and begins the thinking process. Even to identify with a thought of awe and wonder leads you down the road of more thoughts and more thoughts, and soon you are reliving the whole incident. Just claim it as a part of yourself and then let it go without internal comment. Mm-hmm. Once you give it importance and a name, anger, love, excitement, it then takes over your thinking. If you had a fight with your spouse that morning that was not resolved, the anger you felt will, if you allow it, fill your thoughts, and your session to find peace will be useless. Werner Heisenberg's uncertainty principle says that reality is observer-created. Thoughts are energy like everything else, and when you observe and name a negative or a positive thought, you give it power. Proverbs says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Mm-hmm. To me, this reinforces what quantum theory puts forward, that thoughts are real things. After a while, you begin to receive information that you instinctively know is your own deepest truth, information that you can use to better understand yourself and how you can bring changes to the areas of your life that you wish to change. This may seem uncomfortable at first, and you may have doubts. Many times you will want to quit, but continue, and you will find that it is very much worth the effort when you begin to mine the gold that lies at your inner core. It is difficult to give a true picture of how to do it and what to expect, because I believe that each personal truth is unique, and search for that truth is also unique. Your ultimate purpose is getting in touch with your higher self on a one-to-one basis. So if you hold that idea as your beacon, you can and will reach your goal.
Thank you. That was Anna Counter reading from her chapter on creating your own reality on Out of Two Paths, One Understanding, which is a book that she wrote with her brother, Jim. Each of them has a whole half of the book, essentially. Yeah. And they will be coming to Fairfield on October 14th, 2016, to do a reading and signing at Revelations Bookstore at 7:30 p.m.
Isn't it great that we have that venue?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
We had a question come in by text.
Oh, okay.
While Jim was reading, the question was, Jim, do you have a suggestion on how to cultivate a belief in our desires?
Yes, as a matter of fact, there is a part of a chapter just on that particular subject. I'm not going to go to that right at the moment because I can't tell exactly where it is. But I think you have to begin with a thought process. If you have a desire that you want fulfilled, you have to look at that desire, and is it first of all a reasonable desire? You know, you can't be a quadriplegic and expect you're going to be a football hero.
Yeah, right.
But if this is a desire that you have to help your life, to progress in your life, begin to think about that. Think about that all the time. Whenever you get a second, think about that that accomplishment. But you have to begin to believe that you have already accomplished that. That is something that you already have, and then keep working on that each day and thinking about that, and it eventually it will come about if you have the true belief that you already have your wish or your desire.
You know, it's interesting because there's a paradox there. You have to believe that you already have it, but you have to do the work to get it. And sometimes I find there are people who have the belief, have the vision, but won't do the work.
Well, yeah, you might say they have the desire.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's like having the goals, but not being willing to work for them.
Yeah.
But, follow through is really the most important, the true belief that you already have it.
Anna, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that?
On that subject, I don't know. I have, I think I've covered it in my part of the
right,
book, but a little
right.
bit I do, you cover it.
Right. What are some of the ways that as you started to gain this knowledge about creating your own reality, what are some of the ways that it impacted your life?
Well, it made me, first of all, realize what I was and what I was not. And when the idea that my reality could make me so much better, make my life so much better than it ever had been, just by changing the way I believed, it was an enormous step for me.
How did you go about taking that step, and how did it manifest in the world? You know, how did your life change?
As I was getting, as Romulus was coming through to me, he would never tell me how to do anything, but he would tell me I had to do something, but he would never tell me how to do it. I had to do that, and I figured that out myself, and he didn't, I would try. And, you know, a lot of those things were like looking for a needle in a haystack at midnight.
Oh.
You didn't know much about what you were doing. You didn't really know what you were looking for. But all of a sudden, one day, I would look at the world in a little different fashion. These ideas had been stewing in my subconscious for so long. And all of a sudden, I was looking at the world in a little different way. And then Romulus, when we had our session, would more or less pat me on the head and say, good girl, or more or less something like that. And I had gone ahead and done what he said I needed to do. And so we went that way, step by step by step. And it took my accepting first, allowing myself to accept the fact that I could get this, that this was in my future. It was already there. All I had to do was claim it, but I had to learn how to claim it. And I think that's about the most I can tell you about it. It's a little kind of fuzzy, but it is possible.
So, you know, usually on Writer's Voices, we talk a little bit about the process of getting published.
Yes.
So what was that like for the two of you?
Jim?
Well, we went through a rather substantial process of trying to determine how to publish a book, even. You can go through, you know, self-publishing. You can hire a publisher. There are advantages and disadvantages. Part of it depends on how much you're willing to share. And what is your goal? What is your true goal on wanting to publish a book? Is it to have a book that you share with your family or share with your friends to emphasize your belief? Or is it the goal to make money, to try and sell a lot of books and become a successful author? I think part of what you have to determine is what is your goal in publishing the book. Once you have a goal down, then you can figure out a little better how you're going to go about it.
And so what was your goal for Two Paths, One Understanding?
Our goal basically was to write a book where people could read and perhaps in some people open up their minds a little bit to different beliefs. We believe differently than for example some religions do, but we don't have anything against religion at all. Religion is very necessary for very many people, but we are looking at things a little bit different way. Our beliefs are a little bit different than what might be professed in a religious entity. And so our goal may be not to convert people, not to try and convert people to our way of thinking on anything, but basically to get them curious, to start thinking about things perhaps in a little bit different light and perhaps open their minds up a little bit to go further in their quest of knowledge and truth.
Okay, and so what decision did you make then about how to go about being published?
Well, we found a local publisher, a local to me, and well, she wasn't a big national or international publishing house or anything. She was able to help us through the process, the filing at the Library of Congress, all of the necessary things, how to format the book, go through the editing process. So we had this individual, this local publisher, Prairie Pond Publishing, that helped us through the entire process and worked with us on this. So that was, for us, I think that worked out very well. And we were very pleased with how she helped us out.
Thank you. I want to remind our listeners again that Jim and Anna will be in Fairfield October 14, 2016, 7:30 to 9 p.m. at Revelations Bookstore. And you can certainly, if you're in Fairfield, I expect the book is available there now. Is that true?
It is.
Okay. And if you're not in Fairfield and you're listening to this and want to obtain the book, what's the best way for someone to get a copy of your book?
Well, you can request it through your local bookstore and they can get copies, but you can also request it. It is published on Amazon, and it is a Amazon number one bestseller, so you can go to Amazon and get the book hard copy. Or you can also get it on Kindle through Amazon.
And what does it take to become an Amazon number one bestseller?
Well, they have a time frame that they measure, whether that's a week or 2 weeks, and they will determine if your book is the bestseller in a specific category, whether it's under religion or whether it's under science or whatever category it may be under. And if you look over that measuring time frame of a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is, sells more books than any other book in that category, then it is considered an Amazon number one bestseller.
And what category is your book in?
We are in three categories.
Which are?
Go ahead, Sam.
One is religion, one is philosophy, and for the life of me, I've been trying to remember the third category, and I cannot do it. But those two for sure.
Okay.
Mom, do you have any final questions?
I'm going to use a quote from here for the ending, because there were so many parts of this that I really, I took a lot of notes and I really found interesting, really did. I think it's well worth your time to read it, and it's well worth your time to try some of these things, some of these like setting goals and thinking positively and rejecting the negative around you, because in today's world, there is so much of that that we really have to be on our toes. And
Anna, what's the most important message you want to give to readers?
The message that I want to get to readers is that this life is only one in a series of lives. If you can picture a stage with a play going on that you have written along with your fellow actors, and when the play is over for you, you just walk off the stage and go home. And home is where we go when we pass over, when we die. And that there is so much more to reality than the narrow limits that we have had to live under. We are in the process now of getting rid of those limits so that we know there's more to reality than what we've had so far.
And both of you, I think, talk about not being afraid of death in the book.
That's right. Absolutely. There is nothing to fear. It's just going home. There is only death for your body, and everything dies on this earth, in this reality. And so your body dies, but the you part that lives in your body never dies. It just goes back home.
Well, Jim and Anna, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll see you in Fairfield next Friday, October 14th.
And wonderful. Thank you, Monica. We really appreciate this.
And Mom, do you have some final words for
us
today?
This is from Jim's part of the book, a quote from The Power, "When the power of love overcomes the love of power, the world will have peace."
That is so true.
See you next week on Writer's Voices. Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUU-LP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.